And welcome to another Joshi Journey Through the 2010s. It is I, JD, joined with K.
Yeah, sup, man? Another one of these 2010 journeys. We're in 2011, catching the wave.
We are catching the wave here in 2011. A tournament from Pro Wrestling Wave, if that didn't give it away, from May 2nd, 2011 to July 24th, 2011. A show with... It's a tournament, a block tournament, separated into three blocks. The
kind of like your G1, right?
Well, I mean...
Wave one?
Yeah, I guess. It's round robin through the three blocks. There's the technical block, the young block, and the visual block. So each year they give unique names to each block to kind of, I guess, define the wrestlers that are inside it.
Well, I took it in 2016, where that makes absolutely no sense. Like,
or
the
they have a lot.
Block.
Okay, well then they have a lot of fun with the names. All right, I'll get into the people involved in a second here, but this is episode 24. We're coming across doing quite a few Oz Academy episodes in 2011. I noticed.
Yeah, it seems like your love for Ozaki is starting to bleed into the episode selection.
Well, Ozaki certainly has some influence that we're starting to see bleed over into other promotions that we're covering now, namely this one with a certain two wrestlers.
Yeah, well, see, I was mildly aware of her influence in Wave and other promotions. However, I don't think I had seen the influence, like seeing the people that were influenced. So it's very interesting for me to see that.
Yeah, and it's not really a gradual thing, or maybe it happened on a house show that we missed, but I like to think we've kept pretty good track of the Oz Academy shows in 2011, and we covered a couple Wave shows in 2011, and we didn't see the change in Oz Academy, I should say, or the wrestlers involved with what we're seeing happen, but... We got Masaki Iwata and Cherry and a couple people in Oz Academy starting their own faction called the Black Dahlias.
Yeah, so I got a bit of information on that, actually. So way back when I was just starting off in this journey, and Wave, or my own Joshi journey, like starting off and watching it and everything, Wave had a service called the Wave Network.
Yes, I've heard of this.
It had the show, which I watched, coming back and watched a lot of the archive stuff, which admittedly was not a whole lot comparison to, like, say, Stardom and stuff at the time. But they had the show that the Black Dahlia formed.
Ah, now, if you pull up the wrestler on Cage Match, for example, which I will do right now with Misaki Iwata, and if you go to Tag Teams and Stables, it shows in 2011, Black Wave was formed. So maybe that's why we haven't seen it in Oz Academy yet. But it involves Ohada, yeah. Bambi, Hiren, and Oka. And Black Dahlia also forms in 2011, which is a whole host of people. Mixture between Wave, JWP, Oz Academy. It's a whole host of people. And I have to... Because Yumi Oka clearly isn't part of it during this tournament in time, it's the Black Dahlia stable, not the Black Wave stable.
Ah, you're kind of half correct on that,
damn
actually.
It. I thought I was onto something there.
Half correct. So, I saw the two Wave shows where she recruited people to Black Dahlia. Those I know it's Black Dahlia because she said it in English, and so I'm like, I recognize that word.
Well, the key for me was also Cherry. She's not in Black Wave, she's in Black Dahlia.
Yes, so I watched a show where I think it was Cherry and Ohada? It was Cherry and somebody else that she pulled, because she was tag teaming with them in a match, in the undercard, I think, and she pulled them, although they were tagging the undercard, and she came out to ringside, and she kind of pulled them aside and talked to each of them, and in the main event, they jumped Gammy.
Oh, I love it.
this was in, sometime in 2011, beginning of 2011? It was a small show. It was like a nothing show that they did, but it was how I knew what Black Dahlia was, at least. I think I only knew it as Ohada, Cherry, and Oka. Oka is the leader.
Well, she isn't yet, that's for sure.
she is.
She didn't seem like no leader on this show.
No, because it's like Oz Academy, minus the Ozaki being the definitive leader. It's like a close mesh thing, but she's the one that was recruiting people.
It sure seemed like it was Ohada's group. But I guess Oka, with her seniority, would probably be the smarter assumption.
Yeah, Oka was definitely... Ohada was just one of the people she recruited. Ohada hadn't had much of a career to be doing that stuff yet, making her own factions and shit. Oka did, though. But she had the sway with the people she knew at the time. Ohada did not have that.
All right, you've convinced me. Black Dahlia is something quite new to me. It didn't last very long.
It did not.
So, as we know, with tournaments, the two most important days of a tournament in any promotion out there is the first day and the last day. While your middle shows, you're able to tell your stories, perhaps have a couple good matches mixed in, and you really want to create the buzz to begin with, so you can get your attendance figures more up for the more middle shows, and then climax at a good point at the end show, so then you can ideally grow your audience, get people to come back, and that will kind of keep you for the rest of the year. That's a basic explanation there for you. How do you think they did, Kay?
So looking at the dates we have and the matches they have on each, I think they did well enough for the first day. At the very least, they put some matches that were clearly the bigger ones that main evented the show that they ran, which I'm assuming was Shinkiba. So, I mean, we get like Uematsu and Ryu Mizunami, right? We get Kana and Uematsu. No, I'm sorry. I'm looking at different dates. We get Kana and Uematsu. We get Kagetsu and Shimono. I think the big one was getting Nagisa and Oka and Ohada and Kurihara on the first day. I think those are the ones that main event the show, or main event and semi-main event.
Okay.
I think for a first day, they did at least a decent job building the card.
So, when I put all the cards kind of next to each other, and I was kind of looking at them, because our DVD set does something kind of cool, and it did it the same for our 2010 review of Catch the Wave, was it just covered all of the block matches back to back to back, and then you get your winner of the block, and then it goes into the next block of run, and then it has the entire last day, the Catch the Wave final. It has the whole show on it. So I do like the format of the DVDs. So then it's up to you and I to just kind of look at the cards, make interpretations of what they're doing. So I got a few questions for you, Kay.
All right.
And then I'll come back to those attendances. Compared to 2010, how do you think this Catch the Wave compares to the year prior? And to just reiterate, Yumi Oka won in 2009, the very first one, and the Mighty Gammy won in 2010.
So, we're talking about just strictly day one or just the tournament as a whole?
The tournament as a whole.
I think this one was better than the last one we watched. I think that was even close. I think we got a lot of better matches, and I think a lot of it was because we didn't have Gammy weighing down big portions of the card and the tournament. But I think we had a lot of Kurihara and Oka and Ohada. Like, the visual block was definitely the best block. A technical block, I think, was also kind of pretty good at times, pretty solid. Kana is pretty good. Uematsu did good. Cherry was pretty good too. The young block was the only one that I think was not as good, but I don't think it was expected to be as good given the level of talent there.
No, it was not.
I'd say it was better. I'd say it's marginally better, like quite a bit better.
I agree. I enjoyed the 2011 Catch the Wave a lot better than the 2010, and the Mighty Gammy not being in it was an immediate improvement. Because her matches took up such a chunk of amount of time. She was putting nobody over. You couldn't grasp any sort of story that was happening in that block because so much was just solely around her. And then we kind of saw how that played out, and that bogged it down. The other thing is the young block of 2010 was with like Mizunami, Ohada, Io Shirai, and it was just, it was catch the draw left and right. And that was just so rampant throughout every block, actually. It was just draw after draw after draw. And yes, we got, we still got quite a few draws on this one, but they definitely felt more spread out, and there was an element of story to one person that was getting some draws. So I thought overall the booking was also way better than 2010.
Yeah, there was a focus on this one, whereas I think the 2010 one was more revolved around loosely the Okagami stuff, which it did a terrible job of even doing. Whereas I think this one, it told a story of one wrestler having trouble in her block, and then coming back around to win it all, which I thought was a good, simple story to tell in a tournament like this, and that kind of, I think they did a good job with it. I think also compared to the last Young Block, which was I think a mess. I think was how I remember it being. Like Io was great, but she had like no control over her own stuff, so she was just going all over the goddamn place. And she's in there with other rookies who don't know how to handle that, so it was a mess. This one was wasn't as good. It wasn't good at all for most part, but I feel like it wasn't a mess. It was just bad wrestling.
There was definitely more direction.
Io Shirai flying everywhere.
There was definitely more direction in this year's block. And one of my major complaints of 2010 was Wave is an upstart promotion by definition. Like it is very upstart. And one thing that they needed to establish was new young stars that are going to be featured in their promotion. And 2009, I think Oka was probably, in hindsight, a good decision because she's going to be the mainstay. And Gammy getting the, you know, the gold watch, if you will, in 2010.
Not just, even close. I hope that she retires for a couple more years.
Well, I know, but it's still a gold watch because she's not even in it in 2011 to defend the title. So that, I think that's a... I mean, I'm happy she wasn't in it, but it kind of, from a kayfabe sense, makes no sense. So nobody has the opportunity to beat her. And one of the stories in 2011 was Yumi Oka trying to beat a veteran of sorts. And she kind of gets that victory over Oka. And it turns out, as we covered before on a catch on a Wave episode, let's see, that would have been... Let me just pull that up.
It's been a little while ago, right?
That was in episode 19 when we covered Ice Wave.
Ice Wave, yes.
Yeah, and that kind of caught us up through the year up to that point. Up to that point in Wave. So let's
the thing with Wave is, like you said, they're upstart. So we're not going. I don't think we'd even start watching most of their shows until God, 2014, 2015. Like they have a few years there where they pick up the momentum and start doing some very good stuff. The problem is it doesn't last long before they close the doors the first time. So it's kind of interesting. Their whole history is very interesting.
Yeah, it's... And one thing I noticed, and I was kind of curious about this, is... So back to the attendance. They ran Shinjuku Face, in the Joshi scene, it's larger than Shinkiba. What would you say? It's got 500 people that you can kind of stuff in there?
Up there, yeah.
Yeah.
That's about right.
And on day one, Wave runs their day one tournament, the first day of their tournament in Shinjuku Face during Golden Week. I think a very good decision. Good timing.
That's a smart decision. Yeah, it's a holiday.
Yeah, it's a holiday. And then they finish it up for the final day on July 24th, which I believe is another holiday in Japan.
I don't know. So the thing with Wave, and that was their one big claim to fame, was that they ran during the weekdays, days that normally companies do not run. So that's also why they always had low attendance figures, because they shoot themselves in the foot from the jump because they run during work weekdays, which most companies do not do that. Even on holidays, they do. But most companies, like, you don't see Stardom running on a random Thursday during the week. They're not going to do something like that because no one's going to come to their show.
Health Sports Day.
Sports Day.
There you go.
They end their tournament on another holiday. It's smart to do, but I think because as we see with the attendances, I think you told me out some of the numbers, they were all very low. But again, they run a lot of their shows during the weekday, which is already a dumb thing to do. Okay. But
well,
it's their thing. That was their thing. So.
Well, here's the thing. Their average Shinkiba attendance before the tournament was about 175 to 200. Okay.
It's about right for running during the weekday. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, they got, they got just under 300 people for day one. For the
it's a sellout.
Eh, I mean, they're getting there.
I think off the top of my head, it's like in the mid 300s, right? Mid upper 300s is the cap for Shinkiba.
Well, yeah, but they ran the face on the first day.
Oh yeah. So yeah. 500. Yeah, I don't know why I keep thinking they ran Shinkiba first day.
Yeah, I don't know either. For the remainder of the tournament, they basically ran one show in Osaka, one show in Hiroshima, and then the remainder was basically in Shinkiba. Their average Shinkiba attendance during the tournament was 250 to 300.
That's good, though. That's actually good for the time.
A significant increase, relatively, for this time frame.
Yeah, for this time frame, getting into that spot in Shinkiba was a win.
Yeah. And then on the final day, which you will be pleasantly surprised, they did run in Shinkiba. They did not go back to the face, but they did get an alleged attendance of 469 people. So if we are to believe these numbers...
I don't know how much I believe that.
If we are to believe these numbers, I'm skeptical of the Shinkiba number. Will let's assume for positivity, super no vacancy, they got 400 people. Okay.
I mean that'd be still like God. I can't remember the exact number. I know it's like I want to say it's like 489 or 490 or 390 is the cap for Shinkiba. Because I know Stardom sold it out last time they ran there, and I think there was like 3-something. So I wouldn't be shocked if you had standing room, but the thing is, where are you standing in Shinkiba first ring? You've seen the venue, right? There's nowhere to actually stand.
Yeah. So for all intents and purposes, let's go with a sellout. So they sold it out. And based on what they were running prior on average, what they ran during the tournament after the first day to the final getting a sellout, if it's to be believed. That's a success for the tournament. That's exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, that's definitely a success.
And judging by both our opinions over what we saw during the tournament, that probably has a lot to do with it. And one factor, I think, throughout the tournament we saw was the pushing of young new stars.
I'd say you're kind of right with that, because I wouldn't call Uematsu and... I mean, do we want to spoil who won? Because I wouldn't consider her a young star either at the time.
Well, she's still not part of that like old legend class or doing any of those. They got to somehow highlight the next generation. And with the mixture of Mio Shirai, Nagisa Nozaki, Misaki Owada, Ayumi Kurihara, Kana, Mizunami, like everyone got good. I would say everyone got good highlighted matches to show what they can do. And they were pushing the right people.
Yeah, because I believe, off the top of my head, I believe Uematsu, Kana, and Cherry sort of stick around a lot. And Nozaki, after, well, no, she does leave, so not Nozaki. But they stick around in Wave a lot more up, and I think Kana does up until she leaves for the Fed. She's like a mainstay, or at least a regular in Wave.
Right, she becomes a big, well, big star. We'll put that in quotes, but you get the idea. Yeah, she becomes a star of Wave, and this... And doing what they were able to do during this tournament with the booking, I think was a good representation of that, and it accomplished exactly what they set out. Because let me just, for fun, on the fly, a show in August that kind of follows it up. Let's see what they get here. 261 Shinkiba, so that's more. They were going 180. Now they're consistently getting 260.
That's a very good number. And you got to remember, they run during the weekday for the most part. So that's also very good for them to get during the week.
Yep. And I just clicked on a Korakuen number, which is a show we will do. And it looks like they did pretty well there. I am going to go out on a limb and say 2011 was a good growing year for Wave and what they were accomplishing and setting out what they were to do. And I'm very happy to see this because this is this is where all kind of the young talent is mostly hanging out and getting highlighted.
Yeah, because Neo's dead. I think the interesting thing, for me at least, is I've only seen like maybe a handful of 2011 Wave because that's all they had on the Wave Network. But they had like no 2012, I think a couple matches from 2013. So I don't know if, like, I only know that up to 2014 is when they start actually becoming like really good as a company. So they might become good before that now. I might have to retract my statement that they've only been good for a couple years because I don't know now.
All right, so now it's time for the critique. Ready?
Over the critique.
So you slap these cards side by side. This is kind of where I was heading with this after I praised what they were able to accomplish, because there is some data that suggests that.
Tear them down.
What they were doing. Now I got to tear them down. I think the time allocation of these matches was poorly done. And I think who they were putting in the main events of these shows was also poorly done. I think if you kind of switch people around and give certain matches more time to highlight the skill levels of certain wrestlers, then I think it would have gone further in, accomplishing what they wanted to. Like maybe instead of the 280, they get up to that 300 consistently. Entice more people to say, hey, if I'm going to come to your show, I'm not only going to see good booking, I'm also going to see good matches that is worth my time. Now, maybe there's some politicking involved that I'm not aware of. That's very well possible, obviously.
That's probably more likely than not.
Like, oh no, if I'm coming, I want at least an 8-minute match. I want at least a 10, and then you just throw your hands up and say everyone gets like 8 to 10 minutes, which was a very common thing during this tournament. Everyone seemed to get the same amount of time, and there was a hard time limit rule to these Catch the Wave matches. The Young Block had a set fast 10-minute time limit rule, which for the rookies, that's good. And then the Visual and Technical Block all had 15-minute matches. But if you look at some of these times, not a lot of those matches even went over 10 minutes. So the drama of time allocating something between 10 and 15, I think, wasn't done to its fullest extent to get the right amount of drama in there. There's a couple matches here or there that did its job. Like, comes to mind is the Masaaki Iwata Toshiomatsu match that went about 14. That did a good job. I think they could have done a little bit more than that rather than just kind of steadfast ending so many at like 10 flat.
Be curious to see what the rest of the card that were non-tournament matches were, because maybe that's why. That's where Gammy probably is. Gammy's probably hanging out in those matches, and those probably take a lot more time because of Gammy.
It's funny you mentioned that. So if I click on, I don't know, day two.
Day two specifically, okay.
There is an opening trios match of Black Dahlia taking on Gammy, Kurihara, and Haruhi that goes almost 20 minutes.
And there you go.
There you go. There's the issue. The mighty Gammy gets the most time.
It is politicky because Gammy gets the time, and the rest of you guys got to pick up the scraps.
Let me click on day three. That seems to be mostly... Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. Triple Tails versus Gammy and Friends. That goes 15, and then there's another random tag that goes 20 with...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I think we found the issue.
And that's really what I wanted to go into is I think what would have really helped boost more attendance is to highlight the actual Catch the Wave matches more than have these 20-minute romps with the people that aren't in the tournament.
But Gimmy's the draw, brah, so she gets the 20 minutes.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe Gammy, if she didn't have the longest match in the opener, she was in the main event. Yeah. Okay, here's another one.
Wow, there you go.
Here's another one. Ran Yu, Sakura Hirota, Umatsu, Kurihara, Gammy, 17 minutes opener, and then the rest goes from there. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. Bolshoi and Gammy defeat the Shirai sisters, 17 minutes.
Just like, Yeah. See, we found the problem here. And who knows how long the post-matches for those take, too, because, you know, Gammy likes to showboat afterwards.
Yes. So even though I have a lot of good things to say over this tournament, and there was a success, data proves it, there was still a very gross misstep, and that was the time allocation of these shows, which were still heavily featured around the almighty Gammy. She
would
never fails.
Would you say that there was a large, giant, slow, almighty problem involved in all of this?
I would say that. So I wanted to get that out of the way. Let's talk about this fucking Catch the Wave tournament, because I really enjoyed what I saw. Luckily, this DVD has no Gammy.
Yeah, no Gammy. That's great. Minus the Gammy.
Less Gammy, better. Okay, when I was watching this, I took all my notes on my phone because I was, obviously sharing the screen with you.
Yes, I was just mental checking everything because I feel like if I looked down and typed things, I'd miss stuff, which I often do when I do that.
Yeah, so the way we're going to review this is we'll start with the technical block, go through all the matches, give simple thoughts, who won, and then our match of the block. And then we'll move on to the next block. So the people involved with the technical block is Toshiyamatsu, Kana, Tomoka Nakagawa, Cherry, and Ryu Mizunami. Okay. Got all that? All
right. Got that. Jotted right. down.
Our first match is Uematsu defeats Kana via a sick, wrapped, small package combination. Kana does kick out of a tiger suplex, which at one, which he powered up before getting small packaged.
I thought the match was good. I was very surprised to see Kana lose right off the bat like that, but I think that was the story that we're telling, obviously.
And that was the main event of the show. Match went 10 minutes, 3 seconds. Yes. As opposed to Gammy with the longest match on the show.
Yeah, I mean, the almighty Gammy needs the almighty time.
That's right. So, yeah, Kana loses right out of the gate in the main event. A shock win, I think, some would say.
Yeah, definitely think that was the case, yeah.
Yeah. Also on that show was a 5-minute match, but that's in another block. Ooh. Next match in the technical block is Cherry versus Tomoka Nakagawa. This is where we start noticing Cherry's shtick is random bat.
Yeah, random bat shots that were awesome, you mean.
Yeah, Cherry is in black kind of lace and maybe has a slight BDSM kind of flavor to her, along with Misaki Ohada. Kay, what does this getup remind you of? What group out there in the Joshi universe?
Oh, man. Can I put my finger on it? It's starts with an O, right? It seems some kind of school. Some kind of academy, you might say?
Yes, I would. Sekigun and Oz Academy, run by one Mayumi Ozaki, the trendsetter of the scene of popular, attractive, biker gang-like factions.
Oh, you have no idea, because this isn't even the first copycat group I've ever seen. There's another one way back in the 2000s that was not as good. It involved Fang Suzuki, who I'm enjoying my JD Star journey, but did not join those matches.
Well, I mean, let's briefly mention it now. Why do you think there were so many copycats? I mean, I know the answer, but how about the audience?
It was wildly popular. It got Ozaki a lot, like, it made a lot of money for her. I don't think people understand. When she left JWP, she was in the middle of getting a push, right? She was going to win the major belt and be the big star, and she had fallout with management after Plum's passing and everything, right?
Yeah, the whole promotion fell apart.
Mm-hmm. And so she split, and what she did was she took her group, her faction, called Oz Academy, she made produced shows. Those produced shows did very, very well. I think she ran like 6 or 7 of them, and then she spun it into its own promotion called Oz Academy. And then she made her group that was originally called Oz Academy, just the Home Army, which is Sekigun, that's the Japanese word for Home Army. And the BDSM, the whips, the chains, the leather was very popular. You see, even in Gaia in the mid to late 90s, the whole chains and biker look was incredibly popular, both with men and women.
Oh,
so
yeah.
She was the only person not named AJW or Gaia. Well, I guess Gaia, because AJW was dying. But not named Gaia, that was consistently making money on her shows. Whereas the other companies, like Neo, filed for bankruptcy in 2000 and had to be resurrected from the dead. And JD Star was doing its asterisk thing that was making them lose all kinds of money, was not making them any money at all. So she was the only one making money. So everyone's like, well, that's when Gaia closed. Everyone's like, well, that's the trend. Let's all just copy it. Because clearly it's making money for her. And if we can't join Oz Academy and be on those shows, let's just have our own. I'm even seeing one in JD Star, a small one. It's called the Super Terrors. Very much in a similar vein. They don't have like the chain and the leather and all that stuff, but they definitely have like weaponry and they're wearing jumpsuits, and so it's almost in a similar vein, kind of. But you see a lot of these heel shtick mob rule, as I call them, mob rule sort of groups, not like Dumb Matsumoto and Gokaku Dome, more like just a ruling mob that just doesn't care for the rules and just kicks everyone's shit in and beats everyone up and is corrupt and everything, buys the ref off, stuff like that. You didn't see with Gokaku Dome or Goku Minto.
No, they just had a crooked ref and beat his ass if he fucked up.
Or they would just scare the shit out of the ref. Like, they would make the ref do their bidding by just putting the fear of God in them.
Oedo Tai, I think, has a lot of roots in what Ozaki and Oz Academy started.
Oh, yeah, especially in modern incarnation. The one we're seeing right now in Stardom, that's very much channeling that sort of Sekiguin energy. She's still like a kid. She's like fucking doing the sex appeal and adding with all the other stuff. So she's definitely channeling the Ozaki section of that.
Are you trying to tell me that Starlight Kid is the next Ozaki?
Oh, I sure hope not.
So who's...
That'd be terrible. I mean, early Ozaki, sure. But modern Ozaki, please stay away from that.
Yeah, she's taking so much inspiration from 2021 Ozaki instead of 1998.
I would be shocked if Starlight Kid has seen Ozaki stuff, because she seems to be not modern Ozaki, but if you look at like 2000, mid-2000s Ozaki, she's very much channeling that energy, where it's like the like you're doing the super sexy kind of confident motions to your entrance, but you have like chains and you're barking orders to the underlings, and she does all of that. So that's very much, I feel like, the energy she's channeled, because it's not like Getsu or Tora or fucking Kyoko Kimura or any of the other leaders of Oedo Tai ever did. So it's very much feels like Oz Academy coming from her.
So Cherry gets rolled up, gets the leg overhead roll that Tomoka does that we've seen in Oz Academy in those excellent tag matches with Hiroyo Matsumoto. This match was decent. Mizunami is up next against Umatsu. Umatsu is really putting in her working boots here. This was the match, Kay, where I've always thought Toshimatsu is this like geek mid-carder. Got a wacky look to her.
Looks like Andres Miyagi.
I mean, she's definitely better than Andres Miyagi.
Oh yeah, but she looks like her. I'm not saying she wrestles like her.
Cassandra,
Andres, whatever she's going by this week.
Yeah, but this was the match that I really started to come around on her. There's a goofy swan dive splash that Umatsu's doing. I'm sure she's done that plenty of times before, but we've really only seen her kind of in these highlighted tags, and she does the job, and now she's actually being kind of featured. And with the people in this group, I thought this was good booking to have her in this kind of group.
Yeah, I agree, and I need to stop having the problem that I have where I keep getting her Ranyu mixed up. For whatever reason, I keep they almost look very similar to me in terms of like their
Yu
gear.
Is currently the open weight champion in Oz Academy. This is Toshimatsu.
You mean transitional open weight champion?
I don't know what you're getting. She's currently the champion right now in May of 2011.
Dad, she doesn't tell that for very long though.
She holds it for a few months. Thank you.
She doesn't defend it though. But I think Umatsu's role...
details, scrub. Come on.
And thank you, such a big Ranyu fan. I'm learning a few things about you.
Well, we already...
Well, you do like things mid. You do like mid,
we already discovered
so.
That my entire life revolves around mid. So
we sure did.
All right.
So you know what? Ranyu being your favorite makes sense.
Yeah, she's not my favorite, but we know my favorites. Where was I? Yes. Mizunami Umatsu. Mizunami, she's added quite a lot of moves to her arsenal here over the last year. Umatsu wins via different sort of small package with the legs hooked. So Umatsu, very much the roll-up queen.
Yeah, I get a lot of shock victories, which in a tournament like this, I kind of don't mind those. I mean, if we're just talking normal matches, if you do it too much, I kind of don't like it sometimes, right? Doesn't really make you come off as a convincing winner, unless it is your finisher like a Saki. But in this case, I like that. I like when you're in a tournament setting and you have a time limit and sort of the speed and the desperation to win, because it's a time limit and points at stake. And mm-hmm. So you're in a different kind of mindset as a competitor. So getting caught in a roll up is believable, and I like it.
Yeah, I didn't mind it myself. Cherry versus Kana. This was more solid than I was expecting, and this is where I went, Cherry's got her working boots on. She's also got a bat, but you know.
Yeah, right. I guess full disclosure for our blocks picking, this is my favorite match of the block.
Oh.
Actually.
Okay.
I find that I always have this weird thing wherever I see Cherry, I'm like, oh yeah, the comedy wrestler. But then when she puts the working boots on, I'm always pleasantly surprised at just how fucking good she is. It's such a weird thing, even in like modern day, seeing her in Ice Ribbon having grappling matches with Tekla that are like really engaging and really good, like not Konami grappling where they're just laying there, a constant motion and using limbs and moving limbs and moving to other limbs whenever you have to move to different spots, and just how good she is at it. I'm always so surprised that Kana is also very good at it herself. So kind of adding those two, and then the element of the bat coming in and messing up Kana's knee and trying to work on that. I really did like this match a lot.
Yeah, but as it turns out, after some kicks and suplexes, Kana is im schlamm as she goes to a 15-minute draw. Kana, 0-1-1. She can't get a win.
Yeah, I like the story they told in the match. Like I said, it was a lot of Cherry working the legs. So Kana's kicks weren't all, didn't, like you can say the story, didn't have a lot of power behind them.
You could
so
definitely
she couldn't really
decipher
fit it.
That.
Yeah, so I thought that was cool because Kana, in other circumstances, probably could beat Cherry. But given what Cherry had sort of done to her and using the bat as sort of like a sort of a crutch to work on the knee when she has the leg locks in and stuff, I thought was a very, very smart strategy for the heel Cherry. I didn't mind this being a draw. I thought it was very good.
All right. Let's see here. Umatsu versus Tomoka Nakagawa. Stylistically, I thought these two worked very well. Fast-paced, quick offense with lots of counters. Tomoka hits a Canadian destroyer, sort of. More of like a powerbomb variation. Umatsu counters into a half-shoot pin right after the move, so she kind of rolls through it. I thought that was a cool finish. Umatsu, roll-up queen continues.
She sure does. I like it. She's channeling her inner Saki Kashima.
Yeah.
JBQ would be proud.
To this point, this was my match of the block.
Ooh, very interesting.
Yeah, up to this point. Mizunami versus Tomoka Nakagawa. I thought this was just decent. Tomoka worked around Mizu, bridge rolls for the win.
I think Mizunami is kind of very hit or miss, I've noticed, with these matches. Like, her style,
she's getting
and the
better,
sort of limits, yeah, with the sort of limits that are set on her, you could definitely tell given her opponents. I don't think she does a good job working around her opponent's style. She has to have a certain style against her to be able to, you know, really shine. And we definitely see it in matches like this where it's just like, just okay.
She's still trying to shake off the Sendai. Let's put it that way.
Still in Sendai. So
yes,
you can't
she's got to shake it off when she's
yet.
Out of there.
Yeah, she hasn't left yet.
Cherry versus Mizunami in literal bingo looking. This is where we get in the bingo hall. This is a weird place.
Oh, yeah.
This
you,
must
did you find the name of this place? You had the name of this place, didn't you?
Yeah.
You found the name of it. It was very funny name.
Hold on. I think this is the one in Hiroshima.
There's like some electric
Cherry
factory
Mizunami.
Plant or whatever the fuck.
Hold on. Yes. It is Hiroshima Industrial Hall. A capacity of 300 set. I sure
Ooh.
Look like that's as many as they could fit in there.
Oh, yeah, it's a small room.
It has a small room, but I would be a betting man to say they probably got like 175 of this sucker.
I don't think they could even get 300, given the rings and the smack dab in the middle.
Yeah,
I didn't
right.
think they could
yeah.
even fit that many.
Yeah, exactly. It's the ring and then as many chairs. Like, it was filled with chairs around it, but there definitely wasn't 300 people there.
God, no. Not even close.
No. They max capacity what they were able to put in. That's what it looked like. You'll be happy to know the Mighty Gammy was not in the main event on this card, but she was in the mid card with the longest match at 24 minutes.
Of course.
With Bolshoi, Io Shirai on her team, losing to Haruhi Iida and Manami Toyota. I wonder who got the pin.
Oh, Manami Toyota.
Yeah, mid Carter Manami Toyota.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I hate you.
On a wave show.
I hate you so much. On a wave show. In like an industrial hall in Hiroshima.
Yeah. Let's see. Black Dahlia lost to Ran Yuyu and Umatsu. Oh, that team, yes. In the main event. 19 minutes. Maybe shave some time off that and put Kurihara, Mio Shirai in the main event. Maybe just a thought. Highlight your tournament.
Yeah, what are you guys doing?
That's what I'm talking about. All right. So that was the Mizunami Cherry in the bingo hall in Hiroshima. Kana versus Mizunami. Draw in the mud. Losers, I say.
Both losers. Kana can't win, and Mizunami just sucks because she's part of Sendai.
Kana versus Tomoka. This is where we notice Kana has a different look she's sporting now. She's got lipstick. She's got the People of Tomorrow mask she's coming out now. And she's going for a little gimmick change here.
Yeah, very close to what you see modern day in the Fed.
Very similar gear, too, funny enough.
Yes, yes. So, this is around the time that I think, because we see it in one of the matches, I think, when she comes in with clown makeup on her face and everything. This is sort of the weird gimmick things she was doing. She has, like, several weird gimmicks that she tries out on this time. I don't know if any of them actually stick. Like, the crazy clown one, the broken or crazy Kana, whatever she called it, the mad Kana. That wasn't, I think a lot of Western fans think it's cool. Definitely, I don't think it was very over in Japan. It was not a very good gimmick. She just did her normal stick, but just did like the Joker shit. Cackling and doing crazy stuff. I don't think it was very good. She had the Kana we see normally. And I think she had like another one where she wore like a lucha mask. It looked stupid. I think that one lasted very long.
Well, she's trying to make money off different things. I can't blame her.
Yeah, because she loses Io Shirai around that same time.
Well. But this match was a little faster, more dynamic. I liked it, but get this. Draw!
Oh, catch the draw, you say?
Catch the draw, Kana.
Jesus Christ.
Story of Kana can't win continues, and she's out. This was her realization that she cannot win. And for those that haven't listened to our 2010 one, there is a last chance battle royal. So all the losers of the blocks have one more opportunity to get to the fourth spot by winning that battle royal. So that's Kana's only option there. Funny enough, Gammy won the battle royal last year and went on
to win
the tournament. Yes.
She spent most of the time on the outside not doing anything.
And Umatsu, because of the draws and Tomoka's draw herself, Umatsu has clinched the block, so she's against Cherry in the matchup. And Big Brain Cherry, using the ref for defense in this match, she uses a figure four with the bat. Then it's counter roll-up city. It goes 12 minutes, 40 seconds. This was my match of the block. Umatsu wins and the block.
Yeah, I thought this was very good as well. I think if we're going to assign MVPs for a block, I feel like Cherry would be mine. I think every match she was in was very, very good.
Oh, it's Umatsu for had, me.
I think Umatsu won all of her matches, but I don't think all of them were... Like, her Mizunami match, I don't think I liked as much. But Cherry, I think, was solid throughout.
Cherry was solid. I don't think she was better than Kana, because Kana had to put her working boots on for 15-minute draws.
Well, yeah, I guess, but I think Kana would be my overall MVP for reasons we'll get to.
Okay. Well, maybe later. The Young Block is next. Kagetsu, Sawaka Shimono, Naokamatsu, and Mika Iida.
Yeah, looks like Hanan. I think I made that comment when I
was
like, when we saw her, I kept looking at her face like she looks like somebody. I feel like I recognize her face somewhere. Like she looks like somebody I know. And then we saw a one click flash of her smile. I'm like, oh my god, she looks like fucking Hanan.
First match was Kagetsu versus Shimono. In my notes, I simply put fundamental draw. 10 minutes.
Fundamentally bad.
Yeah, that was fine. Fine for rookie. No, because
Sawaka's not good.
Shimono, yeah, she is. She's not in the greatest shape. She's in ring shape. I'll give her that. She doesn't seem to get blown
up. She's bulky. She's bulky. I think that's what the sort of build she's going for is being kind of stocky.
Yeah.
But she's wearing a bright as fuck pink singlet that looks really bad.
Oh, she's channeling her Bret Hart. What are you talking about?
Bret Hart, I don't know.
This set the pace for the tournament between these two. This was the story here. Komatsu versus Mika Ida. Here we see the Oz Academy Komatsu cheer section.
Yeah, she had like the camera cuts to literally all of Oz Academy, including Ozaki, if you looked at her. She was like the very center, just rooting her on. And so, of course, she won, obviously.
She did win. She beat Ida with her top rope splash combo, where she goes off the second rope twice and then finishes it off with the top rope splash. Fundamental again.
She had a lot of height on it. So, is that just your entire description of the block? Fundamental.
Well. That's my last fundamental description. Shimono versus Komatsu, Death Valley driver type sit out combination thing from Shimono, and she wins. Simple match. Needless to say, these are very rough.
Yeah, this one especially I think was very rough.
They're learning, Kay. They're learning.
Yeah, some of them were 3 years in, like Kagetsu.
Well, she's got to get that Sendai stink off her.
Speaking of Kagetsu, I think this is the match where she debuts like blonde hair.
She debuts blonde hair and a new finisher. It's Kagetsu versus Komatsu. Okay, do you remember what Kagetsu's finisher is in this match?
Yeah, she channels the Goldberg, the great legendary Hall of Famer Goldberg, and does the damn jackhammer.
And we'll take Hall of Famer out of that, but yes. She wins with the jackhammer. And then it's Kagetsu versus Mika Ida. Another simple match. Jackhammer for the win. Bill Kagetsu over here.
I don't think I ever remember her doing this move in Stardom. Kagetsberg.
Kagetsberg.
I swear, I don't think I... Do you remember her ever doing this in Stardom? Because I swear to God, I don't think she ever did it.
I can't remember her ever doing a jackhammer prior to this tournament.
If she never did, so I swear to God, that's a missed opportunity. I'd have popped so hard for it.
Well, when we see Kagetsu in Stardom during this journey, we'll be looking out for that jackhammer. 450 splash? That is chump shit. I want to see more Kagetsberg.
Kagetsberg.
And in our final match is Shimono versus Mika Ida. Because Kagetsu, tied Shimono. Kagetsu wins. Shimono wins. Shimono draws. I think it'd be a tie. That's how that'd work. And they'd
that's
have
good
a.
It didn't matter. So I think Mika Ida wins anyways.
No. So Shimono and Ida go to shoot headbutts to start. Ida gets a bloody nose immediately. There's a few botches.
Oh, right, yeah, because this is where at least I started speculating she's being trained by Carlos Hamano because she's doing headbutt style.
She has very wacky headbutt offense that's very possible. I put unique. And unique. I thought this was Ida's best showing of the tournament, and they go to a 10-minute draw. Shimono blows it. Kagetsu wins the block. I thought it was good little drama at the end there.
To put instead of unique, I put concussion. Question mark.
Maybe not. And that'll take.
She definitely was rocked for a bit there. It was a portion of the match where she was lost.
Well, when you get cracked in the nose like that, it'll throw off your equilibrium, just like if you get popped in your ears.
Yes, I know that from my boxing experience.
You have boxing experience?
I don't. Oh. It's just a joke.
Oh. Wish you had boxing experience now. Got my hopes up. Visual block contains Masaki Iwata, Ayumi Kurihara, Nagisa Nozaki from Diana at this point, which we just covered, Yumi Oka, and Mio Shirai. A good block of talent here.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you want all of the good wrestlers are in this one block.
I mean, Kana's in the other block.
Yeah, but I mean, this one has all of the good talent in one spot.
Why do you think they call it the visual block?
Well, it could have something to do with all of them being very visually attractive.
Well, I wasn't.
At least two or three of them did grab your DVDs. Wow. So there, I should give you your answer.
When you put it that way. Taking a sip of my coffee. Ohada versus Kurihara starts us off, and that was one from day one, which was... No, I'm mistaken. How dare I?
That was day one.
Was that day one? No.
That's 5-2-11. That's the first day.
No, that's a different match. That is a different match.
Sure, because I have it right in front of me. It says Misaki Ohada versus Kurihara, 5-2-11. That's the first day of the tournament.
5-2... I don't see it on here. What are you looking at, buddy?
I'm looking at the list of matches you gave me.
Well, it's not in order from when they aired, when they happened.
It has the dates right next to all of them. That's how I knew what the first show's card was when I run it down, because they're all 5-2-11.
Well,
is the
they're wrong
day.
Because I'm looking at cage match here, and am I crazy? Am I going nuts?
I think you might be.
It's not on the cage match.
It says it right here in plain bold letters on the DVD.
Well, I know, I understand. 11. I understand that, Kay. I'm looking at cage match and it's not listed.
Cage match is wrong then.
Yes, cage match is missing a match. How dare it make a mistake?
how dare it? The user sourced thing be wrong.
God damn. Okay. Ayumi obliterates Misaki Ohada with that low drop kick she does. We've seen Sakushi do it. We see a lot of Joshi wrestlers do it. Ayumi Kurihara has one of my favorite because she just cracks him. And this one in particular is like one of the best you've seen. This is where I really start to notice the we've seen this black gear from Ohada, but now she's coming out with the cattail whips. She's full black Dahlia heels. This is
the black makeup on and everything.
Yeah, the black makeup on, the cattails.
Yeah.
Yep. Shenanigans, ref bumping. It's straight heel work. Neck breaker with the whip after the ref bump. And Ohada shock wins Kurihara. Another setting the pace type of match here.
Yeah, I thought this one was very, very good. Ohada has actually my best match out of this. I mean, we didn't give her best match for the Young Block, did we?
Oh. Shimono Ida.
Oh, I thought Kagetsu now Komatsu was the one for me.
Mm, okay. You just like the jackhammer.
I did.
Oh, you know what? I think Cage Match has Yumi Oka instead of Kurihara here.
Oh, well, they're incorrect.
They're incorrect, yes. So, I believe the match only went 5 minutes to a... Maybe they're saving that match for something bigger, but it's not like there's any titles in this promotion yet, so I don't
no,
see...
No, and Kurihara is not really... Like, Ohada's on the rise. Kurihara's kind of stuck where she's at.
I mean, she's got her popularity. Like I said, like, it just takes one promotion to just say, hey, come on, we'll book you more.
But you know damn well that's not going to happen.
I know,
you?
We've had this conversation a million times. Doesn't mean I can't still get irritated that people didn't do this. Oka versus Nozaki,
like
the fighting of boot style. Nozaki flash rolls Yumi Oka, and this is kind of...
Is this where she gets the shoulder thing? Where she
no, not yet.
The shoulder?
This isn't where we noticed it yet. It's the next match. So yeah, it's just a flash roll on Oka for Nozaki to get the shock win. And then on the next match, it's Mio Shirai versus Nozaki. And early in the match, Nozaki takes a bump and hurts her already taped shoulder. It's visually then bothering her. She can't lift it. She's got it kind of arched, holding against her chest. And then she very obviously talks to the ref, because then there's just immediately gets Mio in a sleeper hold and it's over. And then from that point on, Nozaki was she continued the tournament. I thought she was going to go out from there, but... She continues on. She favors that shoulder. They make all her matches short. There is a match where she takes a German right on it, and it looks just painful.
I think why she continued it. I think when we watched it, well, I don't think it was paid. She's working for Diana. You have to go out and work. We booked you for these matches. You can't make us look bad. We just started. Politics.
That is a.
She pulls out. She pulls out. The Diana has to. has to foot whatever that is and maybe give them another wrestler to put in, or it kind of reflects badly. And sure, Kyoko anyway has a name, but Diana's a new promotion.
Yeah, I mean, old culture, it's very possible.
Nagisa's also a new wrestler. She's not, like, she hasn't been around for very long. So
yeah, just a few years.
All of that kind of goes around into that. So I don't think it was even money, because I doubt that she was paid a whole lot. She's still pretty young in her career. She's probably lower on the pay scale. She probably get paid as much as Kagetsu is, if we're completely honest.
Yeah. Ohada versus Mio Shirai. I thought this was great. It's heel Ohada versus very smooth working Mio Shirai. We're definitely seeing the best of Mio start to come out in these kinds of matches where she's got her, what would you say, like a Taekwondo type background with her sweeping kicks and smooth drop kicks that she does. Everything's nice and quick.
I don't know if she has a martial arts background, though. I wouldn't be surprised if she did. I know Ohada has a bit of a martial arts background herself from JD Star, but I want to say you're probably onto something with that. I think she has a kickboxing.
Yeah, that could be very... Because when I'm watching Mio Shirai during this particular Catch the Wave, there's a lot of just tells, let's say, of the modern-day Ice Ribbon main event style.
Yeah, she's fucking the head trainer, so of course.
Yeah, you see a lot of
it. She's been the head trainer for, like, what? She retired in 14?
Mm-hmm.
She's been the head trainer for a good while now, because she was immediately slotted into the head trainer role when she retired.
Yeah, it's very much my bag. I really enjoyed watching Mio Shirai and Misaki Iwata go at it. We get Germans from Ohada, which becomes like a trademark for her in the tournament, besides the cattail whip and the heel shtick. She's just throwing people on their neck and shoulders. It just looks brutal. We get more sweep kicks from Mio. This is when it spills to the outside, and Ohada tries to steal a countout like a heel. And then Mio says, this was hilarious. I love this. Ohada's trying to get back in the ring after being a cheater, and Mio just blasts her with a chair in the face, knocks her off the apron, and it's a double countout, and then they go to blows, gets chippy after the match. I love this.
It was fantastic. I love it. She reared back and just whacked the fuck out of her. Yeah. That had to have hurt.
It is from off. Yeah, it's from off camera. You just see a chair fly in front of you. And you're like, what?
Oh, it was great. And it blasted her too. Like, I don't think she didn't expect it, or she didn't expect it to be that hard, because she was clearly taken aback on it when she got hit.
Yeah. So Mio's like, you're not going to get this win on me this way. And this turns out to be a story for Ohada, just based on this one countout of her kind of just trying to keep up with another wrestler in this tournament, which was a fun story that was being told. I don't know if you caught on to that.
I did. Okay. Yumioka, right?
Yumioka, she is the one. Kurihara versus Yumioka. This was awesome. This was what I was talking about with teasing the draws. This went 14 minutes, 22 seconds. Oka's kicking and tagging was on point. Sometimes Oka has a habit of just kind of, I don't want to say phoning in, but she's running the ropes slower. She's just kind of doing her basic offense. Big boot, boot
just
in the corner.
A lot of boots. Just a bunch of boots, and then that's it.
But this one, she was strategically placing Kurihara. The way the match was laid out, Kurihara's getting on the turnbuckle, and she's like leaning Kurihara. She's pulling her hair over, and then just front tags her Kawada style from the top of the turnbuckle. Oka was had a real good tournament, and it was doing things like this that really won me over. Kurihara is obviously a really easy babyface to root for. There was a huge counter roll sequence in the match, big near fall moves, and just when you thought it was going to that draw, Oka does a cross arm straight jacket jackknife pin to win. It's a real cool, like Zack Sabre like, Jonathan Gresham like pin roll up combination with the jackknife cover. It really took me by surprise. It took the audience by surprise because they didn't know what they were witnessing. And then Kurihara eats another pin. She gets rolled up again. And that's it for Kurihara. She's out of the tournament. Shocker.
Yeah, I think this would have been my match of the block had a certain other match not been really good for me and engaging.
Ooh, I'm curious what it was. All right. Oka versus Nozaki. Nozaki clearly working through that shoulder injury. Cradle clutch after a German on her shoulder. Ohada wins. This was very short.
Ohana wasn't giving a fuck about her injury. She's like, yeah, but I'm just going to fucking German you on it.
I think my theory is she forgot which shoulder was hurt because she
probably
leaned
did.
Into a certain side. Or who knows, maybe they just said, fuck it, make me land on my bum shoulder and then just cradle me. That's what happened.
Or she could have just shot on her a little bit. Who knows? Yeah. It could have been many of those three things.
Kurihara versus Mio Shirai. I like this. Stiff kick match. The match. Fast and Furious. Hammerlock, T-bone, suplex to win. Kurihara's, biggest victory. It was the most convincing kind of powerhouse win that she had.
Yeah, it was definitely. I think it was outside of the other Mio Shirai match. I think this is another one of Mio Shirai's better performances we've seen on this journey.
Yeah, Mio's definitely very impressive. It looked like her and Kurihara were kind of on the same level. How much better would this tournament have been if Kurihara had won in 2010 and they were playing into the story where she was coming in to try to win twice?
That would have been marginally better. You would have bought into every single bit of the desperation for her trying to win.
Right.
But that's obviously not the case.
That is not what we got. But nonetheless, Kurihara was fun to watch. Ohada versus Oka. Battle of Black Dahlia. I still don't know if that the time frame matches up yet, because Oka was wearing this. I guess she was kind of in the black leather, right? But she had green in her, so it doesn't seem.
I mean, that doesn't mean. Ohada had like gray in hers, so it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, maybe I'm overthinking. Well, no, Ohada had the like the teal blue she got going on.
Yeah, it looked very gray though. I thought it looked gray, but yeah. So it's not.
Do we gotta have another color argument here? I see purple, you say blue. I see blue, you say gray.
Oh, listen, you were wrong on the first one. So
I was right.
Okay.
I did the Twitter poll and everything.
Your friends and family voting for you doesn't count.
God, talking about Momo's hair and
hair color, which it's very clearly blue. She's taking more photos of herself with it. It's very obviously blue.
Oh, okay, Mister Twitter poll says I was right, but anyways.
Your Twitter poll was wrong then.
Ohada versus Oka. They had a brawl into a big move match. I quite like this. It was very different than anything else in the tournament. Huge Ohada hurricane run off the top rope, which into like a lucha roll up. That was sick and different. Lots of snap Germans happening. So I thought we were getting like a New Japan main event style match here. Oka tagging kicks to boot. And then Oka wins off a top rope Baldo bomb. Good match! Exclamation point.
My match of the card. Match of the block.
Can't argue with that. I liked the Oka Kurihara one more. This would have been my number two if I were to kind of rank them.
There was no stop to this match. It was just, it's almost like, well, it's kind of like what you would see if you saw like Oedo Tai Hazuki versus Oedo Tai Kagetsu. No holding back. We're part of the same faction. I will beat your ass.
Yeah, this was real good. So that sets up Oka over Ohada. Ohada has to now bank on Oka losing her last match to Mio Shirai, while Kurihara and Nozaki, they aren't really playing for anything at this point. They go really short in their match. Crucifix pin for the win on for Kurihara. It's kind of what you expect there. And then it's down to Oka versus Mio Shirai. Spoiler, and if you remember last year, Kay, Oka and Mio Shirai went to a countout in the previous year, and that plays into this main event on this one. Big boot versus fast strike style is what I have. Tope from Mio meets Oka with two big kicks as Oka's trying to get back in the ring. She's booting her out. Great near falls at the end. Lots of quick roll-ups. Buzzsaw kick from Mio. I say scalps Oka. Did you think she hit her?
No, okay. She very clearly did not hit her.
And pins Oka. Oka blows it, and Mio gets her revenge from last year. I thought that was a good, simple story. Oka blows it. Is that, I think? Two out of the three blocks, the main event blows their chance to move on, while Umatsu already had it won going into that last day. Although, you could say Kana was the... Actually, you would say Kana is kind of the more important story of that block.
Yeah, so this is also another one that very much reminded me of Ice Ribbon, especially the sort of near fall spams.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the great things about Ice Ribbon's style that you see is every big match always has some kind of very close near fall spam section, and it's always so well done because they just know how to kick out at just the right time that it never gets old. And we saw a lot of that here. I very much like that in my wrestling.
All right, Catch the Wave final show. Just to reiterate, it took place from Shinkiba First Ring with Super No Vacancy on July 24th, 2011. We begin the show with the Survival Battle Royal for the...
Shinkiba, but the DVD says Shinjuku Face.
Okay, are you saying that Cage Match is wrong again?
I'm telling you, Cage Match is probably wrong again.
That would make sense why the attendance was
the
larger.
Number is so high. Yeah, yeah, so I think we cracked the code on that one.
We cracked the code. Look at you, Kay, being Mr. Big Brain over here. You learned from Cherry.
I'm just reading what's in front of me.
Yeah, I'm looking at Cage Match, and you're looking at the DVD.
DVD.
The DVD is probably better.
That's probably more accurate, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd imagine so.
Last Chance Battle Royal. Last 2 minutes were awesome, I have. Energy Brawl between Kana and Kurihara was the focus here. As soon as a few people came out and it came down to Kana and Kurihara, they just start blasting each other with forearms and knees. It was sick. Where was this match in my whole life?
I don't know, but I noticed, I don't know if you noticed, but Nagisa was out very early.
No, she wasn't. She was down to the final four.
She rolled out from under the bottom rope. It wasn't for...
Oh, that's what you're talking about. Yeah, she was very much staying away in the match. Yeah.
She was pulling the Gammy from the year prior, except she had a legitimate reason to not
be
in the match.
No, Gammy was single-handedly beating everyone the year prior.
Oh, she also had a whole point where she rolled to the outside. Remember, because we were getting upset by it. She went to the outside.
You're talking about
while
that
everyone
part.
Else was doing stuff.
Kurihara, so there's a cool spot in the corner where Kurihara and Nozaki are in a corner. Yumioka tries to get them both with a big boot, and Kurihara ducks and then just chucks her over the top with ease, because Kurihara is swole.
She sure is. It just dumps her. It was very funny visual, just seeing the shadow of her fall outside. It was great. Yeah,
it was very good. Kurihara goes after Kana. Kana pulls rope down. Kurihara goes over. Nozaki boots her out, and then Kana flash rolls Nozaki. Kana wins the battle royal. 8-minute battle royal, simple. It had its moments.
It makes sense that it was short because Kana's going to wrestle like not too long after this. So,
Yeah, she's got to wrestle 2 more times.
Yeah. Spoiler, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, spoiler. So after the battle royal, they pick the lots between the 4 people, Kana, Kagetsu, and then it's Kana or Misaki Iwata and Toshi Yamatsu. And the winner will go to the main event. So also on this show, Kay, Gami and Naokamatsu defeat Sawaka Shimono and Tomoka Nakagawa, 10 minutes. Mio Shirai and Haruhi defeat Io Shirai and Mika Iida. Io is not in stardom full-time yet.
Not yet, she isn't.
Nope. And then we get into Masaki Iwata taking on Toshi Yamatsu. I thought this was a bit slow. Picks up well once the German suplex exchange goes down. After some nice near falls from some big moves, Iwata hits 3 hurricanes. Unexpected. And finishes her off with a big Dragon Kid-esque crucifix bomb. This move came out of fucking nowhere. I thought this was a great finish.
Sure did. It was very much like, where was this the entire tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I guess she was saving this move to bust out during the semifinals and finals. I have some critique over the finals. So Misaki Iwata, with her Black Dahlia heel gimmick, moves on to the finals.
Kana and Kagetsu. This match was way better. I don't know if you have a breakdown, but I thought this match was way better than I expected it to be, seeing it on paper.
Well,
but these two also had a match prior that was also surprisingly good as well.
Yeah, and they went to a draw, must note.
It did. This one did not go to a draw.
But it did play into that match. There was a lot of the similar sequences, but this time, instead of Kana just kind of bullying Kagetsu the whole time, it kind of showcased the growth of Kagetsu coming out of the young block and going kind of more of a 50-50 exchange with Kana. I use that loosely, but it wasn't the like 80-20 that it was last time. And there's a lot of fast striking, fast grappling. They mesh very well together. And at 9 minutes, 48 seconds, Crossface Chicken Wing wins this for Kana. People of Tomorrow Kana. She's here, and that's her same finisher she used in the Fed.
Yeah, well, it's funny, because she leaves in, like, 3 years.
Well. And then to give these people a rest, they have a nice little trios match. It only goes 10 minutes. That's the way it should be. It is the Black Dahlia duo of Bambi and Oka with Nagisa Nozaki. So they made her work twice on this show.
Oh, boy. Girl. Yeah, that sounds great.
They defeat Kurihara Mizunami and Sakura Hirota. Sakura Hirota's all over these cards during Wave, and yet she wasn't in the tournament. And was she in the tournament in 2010? I don't remember.
No, she was not.
Yeah, I don't think so. That'd be horrible if she was.
I think we would have remembered that.
We would have. Yeah, I think so. No, she was on the beginning DVD. I remember now. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
On to the final. Kana versus Masaki Ohata. What'd you think of the final? 10 minutes, 14 seconds.
I like the match, but I'm a feeling you don't like the match.
I was very disappointed in this.
All right.
Okay. So let me just recap what happens in the match, then I'll go into my reasoning. Kana jumps Ohata during her entrance, and they brawl hard early. It's a mix of Ohata being a hard-throwing heel, while Kana gets a mean streak as the match goes on and strikes her down. After the 10 minutes goes, she goes full Mortal Kombat finisher on her. Palm strike combos, high kick, hurricane, roundhouse kick, punch, and then pins her ass. So the finish was kind of cool. Really established Kana as a badass. And she is your Catch the Wave winner of 2011.
See, I like this match. And upon us finishing the show, I thought this was my match of the tournament. It's not. But given how awesome that finish was, like, God, that was so fucking cool. And it's, how do you put Kana over, right? She has that hard time in her block. She wins the last chance qualifier thing. She goes, like, really strong against Kagetsu. She comes in here, and she's not having any shit. And she just fucking lights into Ohata and her bullcrap. And she's been doing the entire tournament. Ohada's entire tournament's been full of this, doing heel shtick and trying to get one over on people, and Kana wasn't having any of it. And I like that. It was good storytelling, in my opinion. Kana doesn't want to lose because she's already lost most of the tournament, and she's just now back into it. So now she's like, no, fuck you. I'm not taking this bullcrap, and I'm going to make sure I win this damn thing. Otherwise, what was the point of me even winning the last chance qualifier stuff?
Yeah, I share all the same opinions. I just think it went too short, because as soon as it felt like it started to get going, we were heading somewhere, it's just Kana Mortal Kombat and it ends, which I was like, okay, that was a cool finish. I just really would have liked some near falls, would have liked a little drama. I would have liked Ohata to kind of hit some more moves. It never got going for me.
I didn't think that. I thought the story was that Kana comes into this and immediately Ohata, she knows Ohata's going to try some bullshit, so she jumps her.
No, I understand. I understand.
But so the whole thing is just Kana's not letting Ohata do her thing, so she's not letting her get any give in that, and I thought that was cool. It sort of goes to the desperation of her losing all of her matches and not being able to get a block, and now she's in the final, which she probably didn't expect to be.
You said that. I understand.
But yeah. I thought it was great. I thought it was fine.
So, match of the tournament.
I mean, do you want to start, or do you want me?
I mean, I thought it was the Kurihara-Oka match.
Oh, I thought it was the Ohata-Oka match.
Okay. And then your MVP.
I think overall, Ohata. I think I really liked everything Ohata did. All the neat little storytelling that she did. And then sort of to the final, the storytelling playing into that, too. I very much liked Ohata throughout the tournament.
And I'm going to surprise you with this one. I thought it was Yumi Oka.
I can see that. That wouldn't be much of a surprise. She was the solid one throughout the entire block, too. Her and Ohata both, I think, were the most solid throughout the entire block. And Kurihara. But those are like the three that I would have, yeah.
Yeah. Overall, I thought I thought the matches in Catch the Wave, I thought the booking was good. We got a good highlight of a lot of the people that are going to be in the promotion going forward. That was much stronger than last year. We saw increased attendance figures. It's just these cards are they need work.
I don't think they get any better. I think the cards stay about the same, but the tournament gets better. I could be mistaken, though. I know 2016, like, every fucking show was just Catch the Wave, because they had so many people.
Yeah, I believe it.
Like 30, it was like 30-something people in participating. It was nuts.
Excellent. And that will do it. I believe our next episode is a JWP tournament.
Ooh,
so it's tournament JWP. Season.
Yeah, tournament season in the 2011s.
Catch the wave going into JWP. Wait, JWP, we just saw a tag team tournament, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, we just saw the little tag league at the beginning. Well, now we're going to a singles tournament.
Yeah, I bet you Bolshoi wins.
Maybe. I don't know. They got a few other people. Got a Leon.
I mean, she would be there up there to win, right? High speed champion Leon.
Yeah. All right. That was Catch the Wave 2011. See you next time.
See ya.